Good morning. You know, it is so great to see a full room here. I know it's not really full because that blue tape, you know, stuff, but getting fuller every week. And wow, what a joy. I saw this morning at 9:30 a lot of folks I haven't seen for probably 9 months. And I'm making me so thankful for vaccines, thankful for just us moving on down the road and getting to a better place. And so glad to see all of you here today. Maybe you're still watching us on live stream, and we're glad for that as well. But let me tell you, whether you get your vaccination or you get over COVID the old-fashioned way like I did and just get it, then get your butt back in church. And life will go better, right? Because it's just an important part of what we need to do and where we need to be. And I'm so thankful that God is bringing that about. To that end, we are still dealing with blue tape and some of the stuff that limits us. But we are adding a third service next Sunday. You may have seen this on the email. 8 o'clock. That's early. I know you guys are 11 o'clock people, and some of you guys don't ever see 8 o'clock. You don't know there is an 8 o'clock. But let me ask you as a favor, that if you maybe go to class at 9:30, just pull yourself out of bed a little earlier and come to church at 8 o'clock, and that way you can come to worship, and then you can go home and have a whole long day left. It will really help us if we can get more people to come 8 o'clock and 9:30, because we have the biggest problem with space this hour. And I will tell you, as your pastor and as a church, we're committed to, we'll do as many services as we need to get our church family back together. We'll be here for you for that. Thank you so much, though, for being here today. Well, we're continuing our theme, New Year's Revolution. We've still got a couple of 3 weeks to go on this, lots to think about. But today, instead of marching forward in the revolution, we're going to march back. If you have your Bibles, open up John chapter 10. It's where we were a couple of Sundays ago. I want to take another look at this from a slightly different angle. John chapter 10, verse 1. I tell you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all of his own, he goes on ahead of them, and all of his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Now, Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am, there's another one of those I am statements, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate, whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture, but the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Those are pretty familiar words, I think, to a lot of believers who've read the Gospels numerous times. I do want to come back to this a little bit today because I think there's just so much here. And the things that Jesus is talking about really, really can revolutionize the way that we choose to live our lives. I'm reminded here at the beginning of something Charles Dickens wrote, a little book called Oliver Twist. Some of you may have read the book, you may have seen the movie, been to the play or something like it. In this story, which is set in London, you're in an orphanage. It is overfilled with waif children, and conditions are not great, pretty awful actually, and the food is somewhat scarce. And in this story, the very first part of the movie or the first part of the book, whatever you're watching or paying attention to, Oliver Twist is the main character. He's still hungry. He's eaten the little bit that they've given him, his gruel, and he raises his bowl and comes back to the headmaster and dares to ask, "Sir, I would like some more." Okay? That's the whole setup for what the rest of the book is really about. I think a lot of us are a lot like Oliver. We find ourselves strangely unsatisfied in life. We sometimes will look down at our empty bowls or whatever condition the bowl of life is in, and we wonder, is this all there is? Is this all there is? I bet that you have asked that question. It seems to pop up at different times in our lives, depending on what we're doing maybe at the time. And maybe sometimes when we're feeling frustrated or feeling like we're under pressure and we're getting nowhere, we ask that question, is this all that there is? It's a very human question, isn't it? Well, Jesus has an answer for the question. And I think Jesus would say, not just quietly, I think he would say emphatically in his answer to that question, no. Is this all there is? No. If we're thinking there has to be something more, yes, there is. But there are so many obstacles to finding that kind of life. Two Sundays ago, if you were here, we went into John 10 for the first time, and we talked about some of those obstacles. We called them thieves. They are those outside of the gate who offer a false but sometimes fast abundance, counterfeit. And we tend to listen to them. We named them. They're the thieves called pleasure and position and performance. Sometimes they're called possession and prosperity. Sometimes they might be called pursuit or personal autonomy or protection or safety. And there are all kinds of other thieves. Those are the ones that we named. And what they bear in common is that all of them promise so much, yet they leave us so empty, wanting more. But it's really easy for us to buy into the world's messed up philosophies. It's hard to live in the world and not be impacted by it. We buy into the world's philosophies, and thus we gain a counterfeit, false sense of abundance, which ultimately crumbles to dust, just as we will. 2 weeks ago, we talked about life that is lived in our culture in the fast lane, a race that is crowded with rats, some of whose faces strongly perhaps resemble some of ours, and how scary that breakneck ride can be through life, yet how difficult and frightening it is to get off. I talk to people all the time, and sometimes it's me I'm talking to, about how crazy life gets at certain places and how hard it is to keep up with all of the stresses and the fact that we're bombarded by so many different demands and needs. And even though we know that there probably should be something more and there should be something to life besides that, it is very frightening to change. It's hard to get off. There is always a tomorrow, at least until there's not one. A lot of us are living for it. We think somehow it will be better, it will be slower, it will be less manic. We think that it will. We hope that it will. But today is important. If for no other reason, it's in knowing that where we end up in life tomorrow is determined by where we are going today. So it matters. And you know, as always, there's a choice. There are two very distinct pathways in life, and that's going to be the bulk of our consideration today, these two pathways and how different they are. Every time Jesus teaches, he basically is offering people the choice between one of two pathways. He's calling them to make a decision, right? These two pathways are very stark in their contrast. It is so important that we come to understand which one we're on. Jesus is emphatic, and the revolution that he came to bring is all about this choice. Okay? One of the pathways leads to life, which Jesus promises is abundant and full and overflowing. It's life to the full by his description. The best life, more, right? The other leads to death. It's a dead end. One is a revolutionary path of truth. The other is an all too common path of duplicity and lies and deception. One is the pathway to something more. The other is a pathway to more of the same. So let's talk about these two pathways this morning. And first, for the sake of contrast, let's talk about the path of the lie. And I'm going to tell you right at the beginning that if it is the pathway of the lie, Satan is not far away from it. You're going to find his fingerprints all over it, his footprints all along that path. You're going to find his philosophies undermining it. You know, the text we just read this morning says, you have a good shepherd. Who's the good shepherd? Jesus, okay? You've got to know that, right? If you don't get that part, when you go back and read that again. But the fact that you have a good shepherd and Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, implies that there is a not so good shepherd. In fact, there is an evil shepherd, right? And Jesus has been painting this contrast that there's one good shepherd, but all the others tend to be those thieves and robbers who want to destroy you. They want to kill. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. The evil shepherd, though, Satan, is not the least bit hesitant about telling you lies, because that is all that Satan ever does. Listen to this verse from John chapter 8 about Satan. There is no truth in him, for when he speaks lies, he speaks his own native language. For he is a liar, and he is the father of lies. Now, Satan hits us with all of these lies as we find ourselves listening to the voice of the evil shepherd. You can bet that anything he offers us is either an outright lie, although those are usually pretty easy to avoid for us if we know Jesus. Sometimes it's more of a twisted, perverted half-truth that he offers. Most of Satan's lies and this pathway of lie are connected to those thieves that we looked at a couple of Sundays ago in the lineup, the path of pleasure or performance or possession or position, pursuit, personal autonomy, security, protection, as a pathway to true happiness and abundance. They are a pathway paved with lies. But Satan has done his job so well, and we live in a culture in which it's so easy for him, largely because we're prosperous, that Satan has convinced the typical American that success by the means of most of those thieves is the ultimate goal, that we must have success in business, we must have success in relationships, we must have success in all things. And in order to get there, a lot of us have let the thieves become our shepherds. They've become our shepherds. And, you know, it's kind of funny, he's talking about sheep here, and he says the sheep are even smarter. And the sheep are not smart, you know that? Sheep are dumb, and when God calls us sheep, it's not complimentary, okay? But Jesus says, even the sheep are smart enough to listen to the shepherd's voice. They follow the voice that they know, but we're dumber than that when we listen to the voice of the evil shepherd. Sheep know better than humans. We listen to his lies. The thieves have become our shepherds. Sadly, even in the church, this is sometimes true. The church has become more focused on being successful than on being faithful. We've been infected by our culture's mantra. There's nothing wrong with succeeding, okay? As long as the world's definition of that is not your goal. There's nothing wrong with excelling in all that we do. We're told to do that as followers of Jesus Christ. There's nothing wrong about those things, but most Americans wrongly define success in terms of their acquired prestige or power or possessions, something that we can get through what we do. A slightly different tack, but just as fallacious and just as effective is the ruler of this world, Satan's superficially focused idea that brains or lots of bucks or beauty, or biceps, or whatever you want to put in there, will also make you happy and make you successful. These false ideas are all of the thieves' cousins, and they are spawns of Satan and his lies, and they all feed on and reinforce each other. These are the world's status quo, commonly accepted measures of value and success, but these external measurements of abundant living, or what is promised as that, are elusive. It may look like more, and it may seem like more, but sadly, the truth is it's not. Most of you know this. Most of you have been followers of Jesus long enough to understand that there is a lot of choosing that has to be done, that there are two pathways. Most of you know. In our hearts, if not in our heads, we know that success really cannot be defined externally the way that the world does it. Jesus put it this way, what does it profit a man or woman if they gain the whole world but lose their very soul, right? I think most of us know that. And so it's totally something that we should agree with. Any fulfillment, whether it's external or internal, which is built on a foundation of merely human physical effort or creation, is destined to fail. Destined to fail. Externally, you may reach a level of success greater than someone else or almost everyone else, but that doesn't necessarily make you a success. We talked about Solomon a lot a couple of Sundays ago. Solomon had this to say in Ecclesiastes 2, verse 11. You remember Solomon was this extremely smart guy and this incredibly wealthy man who was able to try it the world's way because he had all the money in the world. And so he tried it the world's way. Here was his conclusion. When I surveyed all that my hands had done, he had done everything that any human being could want or try to do. When I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind, and nothing was gained under the sun. Now, internally, you may be about as satisfied as a cat who's locked up in a fish factory, okay? But that's going to be a short-lived fortuitosity. So I repeat, any fulfillment, external or internal, that is built only on a foundation of human physical effort or man-sweated creation is destined to fail because that house is built on a lie. As humans, we're flawed and we're fragile. We're all susceptible to failure and disappointment. We're not ultimately reliable in much anyway because we are not God. Some of the things that we accomplish, the things that we create, they may be good, and as good as they are, they're often tied up or wrapped up in earth, and they can only give us temporary and usually diminishing happiness at best. You know, that's why I'm a tool guy, and I love tools, and I own way too many tools. This is like AA for Jim, right? I'm a confess, you know. But you know what? I buy a new tool, and after a very short time, I want another one, right? That's the way that humanity works. Anything that we do or build or accomplish or theorize, as great as it may be, or even acquire, is going to grow obsolete. And it's going to become just another piece of the pile sold by the pound at Joe's salvage yard. We live in a have-it-your-way world, but success and abundance, according to Jesus, simply will not be gotten that way. Yet many of us, many believers included, are driven by the worldly pursuit. And we're driven by worldly, if not outright satanic, misconceptions. And misconceptions can be very costly in the end, right? If you sleep with the shepherd, you're protected and valued. Jesus says you can know that. But if you sleep with the thieves, one day you're going to wake up as a lamb chop, right? In the first service, I said pork chop, and I was corrected that lambs don't usually end up pork chops, and Jews wouldn't eat pork chops anyway. But why do you guys get so wrapped up in facts, right? If you sleep with a shepherd, you're protected, you're valued, but that's not what the thief wants for you. And if we live under misconceptions, it's going to be the mother of most of our hurts. Proverbs says, as a man thinks, so he is. If we think wrong, if we believe wrong, we're going to live wrong. And if we live wrong long enough, ultimately we are going to die wrong, and then it will be too late. So Jesus gives us a choice. Speaking of misconceptions, I heard this story. I heard an urban minister, his name is Bill Pyle, and he was telling about a black man and a white man who died, showed up same instant before the pearly gates. As they're standing in line, the black man says to the white dude, you're wasting your time here, man. I happen to know that God is black. You're headed for an eternal barbecue, buddy. No way, Anglo kind of shot back at him. I've read the book, and it says that God is white. You're the one who better be worrying about hellfire. Well, St. Peter was there. He overheard their argument, and he smiled. He beckoned the angels who opened the gate, and he ushered both of the men in. He said, you guys are going in together. Peter assured them that they would have their audience with the Lord. About that time, from somewhere deep inside the enormous cloud that shrouds the throne, a voice boomed out, Buenos dias, amigos. misconceptions. By the way, that's not in the Bible anywhere, okay? In case you're worried about the facts, it's not in the Bible. Misconceptions, though, about life or the pathway to abundant life are dangerous. They are roads to ruin. And we must realize that success or abundance, fulfillment, contentment, whatever you want to call it, is really just not attainable by common human means. That's what Jesus wants them to know. God alone, who is neither of the earth nor temporal, is able to give us the something more that most of us, that all of us are longing for, the deeper sort of godly success that we all crave. Our attempts from a human perspective to scratch the itch are always going to be frustrated, every time. So that's the path of the lie, and I didn't want to spend all of our time on that, but it's so important to see the contrast. There is another way besides the path of the lie, and it is nothing short of revolutionary. The pathway of truth. Logical, right? The pathway of truth. In our text, in John 10, verse 10 and 11, Jesus says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come so that they may have life and have it to the fullest. I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." In this passage, in the original Greek language, the "I" here is called emphatic. And that means that when he's talking about the abundant life, the life of something more, it's found in absolutely no other place. It is found in none other than him. And Jesus is trying here to use a very common illustration to explain it to them. These folks live in sheep herding country. They should understand this. But you notice they don't? Quite interesting there. I don't know why their understanding was cloudy or foggy there. So he takes another tack. He says, "I call my sheep by name, and they follow me." My granddad, David Patterson Key, was a rancher and a sheep herder down in Central Texas. It's his homestead that I go a couple times a year to hang out at for a few days. When I was little, I remember this vividly. I was 8, 9 years old, 7 or 8 maybe even. My granddaddy would load us in the back of his red pickup truck. Kids don't get to do anything fun today, right? He would load us in the back of his pickup truck. I have a grandbaby. They're the most precious thing in the world to me. He would throw us in the back of his pickup truck, and we would drive 95 miles an hour down to the ranch, about 10 miles down the road. It was great. Kids never get to do anything fun today. We didn't have any crash helmets or seat belts or, you know, I mean, we just hung on for dear life. It was great. But we'd go out to the ranch, and the minute we'd bump over the cattle guard, something really interesting would happen. From all around, as far as you would hear the bleating of sheep in the distance. And then before long, you begin to hear the footprints of a lot of sheep. And you couldn't see anything because of all the mesquite trees that made it invisible. We would stop finally in a little bit of a clearing, and then before you knew it, there would be sheep coming from every direction, and they would surround his red pickup truck, 200 sheep probably. Even more interesting was my grandfather had names for most of the sheep. And he knew them, and he recognized them, and he knew if something was wrong with one or that one was missing. He knew somehow. And they were not afraid of him. When the two boys got out of the truck, they were kind of afraid of us because we were not the shepherd. They were totally at ease with him because they knew that that red truck meant one thing, food. Okay? The food truck was there. It was lunchtime. So I've seen this. I can understand these verses, even though I'm a kid, grew up here in West Texas. The Bible says people there didn't understand what he was saying. So Jesus takes another similar example, another Middle Eastern shepherding example. He says, "I am the gate for the sheep." We talked about this 2 weeks ago, in case you missed it. Jesus says this is how it works in this culture because they saw this every day. The sheep pens there in the Middle East often will have no gates. And the shepherd will round up the flock and he will lead them into the pen. And then when it's time for bed, he will lie down across the opening. He becomes the gate. He becomes the doorway. And you understand, nothing's going to come in. Nothing's going to get out without him knowing about it. Now, I have a security system at my house. And that's something for, you know, people that have too many tools, right? It's a false idea of security, but it's just, you know, you got to have one now, supposedly. So I have one. If I could get Kurt Gable or Harry Smith to come lie down at my front door and spend every night there, right, I wouldn't worry about my security system. I grew up in Amarillo. We didn't know where the key was to the front door, right? We worry about things now we never had to worry about, but if I could get one of those guys to sleep in front of my door, I would not worry about security at all. It's exactly what Jesus is talking about. This is revolutionary security that he is offering. When Jesus is talking about abundant, full living, and he calls himself the doorway, he is saying there is only one way in, and there is only one way to the source of life, that spiritual nourishment is only going to be obtained in one way, that heaven can only be entered in through one entrance. And the single means of access to all that is life and abundant living is Jesus Christ. There's no other way. That's why as Christians, we got to have that message on our lips. We've got to be willing to infect the world with that message. Put it this way, folks. You want a better marriage? Let Jesus be the gate. Let him be the governing force of everything that comes in and goes out of that marriage, out of your relationship. You want a better job? Be a better employee, maybe a better boss, make him the door of that whole structure in your life. You want more security in life? Let me tell you, don't let a vaccine be your security or a mask be your security. Let Jesus Christ be your security. Because if he is the door and he is the gate, you're secure. You're fine, whatever happens. Do you want a better life experience? Make him the door. Make him the gate. Satan's lie is deeply seated within our culture. And it's evidenced by so many commercials, so many advertisements you see. Satan's lie says you need power or prestige or possessions or brains or bucks or biceps or beauty to find success and to be significant in this life, in this culture. God's truth says to find success in life, you need eternity to pull you and God to fill you. You need him. You need him. In this world, though, choosing him and his way over the thief and the thief's way is revolutionary. To be a follower of Jesus is to live life by his way, to enter through his gate, which is him. It's to have a superabundance of life that we can't find any other way. It's what Jesus is trying to show us. It has nothing to do with superficial abundance. With Christ, there comes a new vitality, a new meaning, a new drive, a new energy. When he is the door and the gate to our hearts, we have a new purpose, a new significance, a new outlook, a new hope, a new joy, a new life. When Jesus is the gate in your life, people will ask why you act the way that you do. But it's only when we enter through Christ the door, and only when we follow the Good Shepherd, because his is the path of truth. Every other path is the path of the lie. I read a story a guy told. He lives in the Middle East. He leads tours of people that look like us and go over to the Holy Land. And he always talks to them, shows them the way shepherds work. That's one of his favorite things to do, is to talk about this shepherd relationship, just like Jesus was. And one day they're driving down the road in a bus, and he's telling them about how the shepherds love their sheep and how they're the ones that the sheep trust. And there's this amazing symbiotic relationship between the shepherd and the sheep. And as they're driving down the road, they look out at this pasture, and there's the sheep that are out there, but they're running in every direction. There's this dude throwing rocks at them and yelling them, and he's chasing them with a stick. Man, just couldn't believe it. He told the driver to speed up, right? Going by that. And got the tour group where he was going to drop them off. He drove back to where that scene was going on, and he told the guy that was out in the field, "What in the world are you doing? I was telling these people about how wonderful the shepherding relationship is between the shepherd and the sheep and how safe they all felt. And here you are throwing rocks at them and yelling at them." And the guy says, "Stop, no, I'm not the shepherd. I'm the butcher." pretty important to know, right? A little hard for us to grasp this revolutionary concept of real life. It certainly isn't something we deserve. It's not something we can pay for or purchase or earn. It's missed or at least misunderstood by most folks. It's just there for the asking for those who choose to follow the Good Shepherd and enter by His door. It's an unexpected bonus. It's unbelievably good. At a funeral here yesterday, a couple came in to, they don't come to our church, but they came into the funeral. A couple that I had gone on a trip with 30 years ago to Russia, back when the Soviet Union was wide open. And I spent at that trip most of 3 weeks in Russia on a mission trip. By the end of the trip, I can remember I was tired, I was homesick, I was hungry, because with the exception of the best Big Mac I've ever eaten that we got in Moscow at McDonald's, we had eaten mainly tomatoes and cucumbers for 3 weeks. Talk about a diet, right? And once in a while, they'd throw us a piece of mystery meat just to keep us alive. But we had, through all of that time, slept in ratty hotels with roaches where the water tended to be brown and cold. We had ridden all over Russia in ancient rattletrap buses that smelled like gasoline refineries could explode at any moment. We rode trains that were falling apart and planes that shouldn't have left the ground. It was so time by the time all of that was over to get home. But between us and home were about 16 hours of airplane rides. Well, we survived two shorter hops there in Russia, flying on Aeroflot, the Russian airline. We made it alive somehow to Frankfurt. From there, 13 more hours awaited our arrival in Dallas. We're flying on an airline called Lufthansa. And back in those days, 747s were about the biggest plane that they made. And it was huge, absolutely massive plane. The planes are big, but the seats, not so much, right? Row after row of standard Southwest airline seats, okay, crammed even closer together, if that's possible. 18 or so seats across the middle. Now, we'd come over on that, so we knew what was coming. It's just something you dread. 13 hours in a cattle car, sitting between a nervous-looking terrorist-type guy and some very large cultist religiously opposed to taking baths. That's usually what happens, right? 13 hours. And usually one of them gets sleepy and wants to nod over on your shoulder, right? I was just not thrilled about the prospect of this trip. But as we were getting ready to board, the attendant called our names over the loudspeaker. And I thought, great, we've been bumped from our flight in a foreign country and we're never going to get home, right? But it was good news. It was better than good news. For some reason, they had sold our confirmed and already paid for seats twice. And for a very few of us, that meant one thing. First class, upgrade. For 3 weeks, I'd been preaching in Russian prisons about Paul's Corinthian letter. Now I was caressed by rich Corinthian leather. 3 foot wide plush seats. I'd never been in first class before. I'd never been in there since. Reclining seats. No peanuts or pretzels in this area. Prime rib, right? With real silverware and crystal salt and pepper shakers, cloth napkins, and ever-refilled glasses. My boss at the time was Roy Wheeler. Some of you knew Roy. Roy was on the plane. He was back in cattle car class. He came up as we were getting ready to take off. He offered me $200 for my seat. And I said, Roy, you can fire me if you want to, but I'm not moving. I had been upgraded. Man, what a great trip home. In the lap of luxury. But you know what? It still took 13 hours. I only got to the airport 30 seconds before the people right behind me, right? We didn't get there any faster or safer than those back in the cattle coach. We just got there in much greater style and comfort. We had been upgraded. What was God thinking about when He sent Jesus to earth Well, it's always about glorifying His name, and He loves us, and He wants to save us. But really what He was thinking about, and what I hear so much in this story in John 10, is that He came with the intention of upgrading life. Through Jesus Christ, He offers us life that's not just good, but better. It's not just full, but fuller. It's not just sufficient, it's abundant. Life to the fullest. We sang the song just a minute ago where we sang, "There's nothing better than You." That's what He came to make possible for us. We still have to make the same passage. We still have the same years between birth and going home, a time, days known only to God. We still have struggles. Knowing Christ isn't going to make life go faster. It's no promise that it's going to be easy or without pain. Entering into His life will not fill your bank account. It won't get you a promotion. It will not make you a success by any of the world standards. But you will have all that you really need, and you'll be richer and happier in ways that money and worldly success cannot touch. That kind of change is elemental. It's revolutionary. Jesus talked about it in Matthew chapter 10. He said this once. He said, "Whoever finds his life will lose it." Okay, what He's talking about is the way that we typically go about it as wealthy Americans. Whoever achieves all the things they think they need to achieve, who stacks up wealth, who gets prominence and power, who achieves superficial possibilities and goals, whoever finds his life in that way is going to lose it. But whoever loses his life for My sake, He's not just talking about martyrdom. He's talking about people that choose the pathway of truth. And they decide that it's not going to be all about all of the stuff that the world says matters. Whoever is My sheep and listens to My voice and follows Me, they will find it. They're the ones who will find life. If you have the Lord and nothing else, you still have the Lord. Right? You may have less by the world standards, but you really have more. If you have everything else in all of the world, but you do not have the Lord, all you really have is nothing at all. And all of that more that you have struggled, like Solomon, to attain actually becomes less. As you look at your life and your priorities at your job, at your achievements, at your relationships, maybe you're tempted to ask the question that Oliver asked, isn't there something more? Is this all that there is? And I'll tell you, if you're looking through human eyes on earthly terms, the answer is a sad and simple yes. This is it. Good as it gets. But if you look to God through His eyes, you're going to hear Him answer the question, no, this is just the beginning. I would love to give you so much more. So the path is ours, and the choice is ours to make, because there's nothing better than Him. Thank You, Father, for loving us enough to bring us into Your revolution. Even though we know so many of these things, even though we are Your sheep by our decision to follow You, still we don't always follow You well. Still, sometimes we listen to the voice of the thieves and the robbers who only mean us harm. Father, I pray that You would not lose patience with us in that, but that as we consider our choices every day, we would find ways in which we're on the path of the lie and we would determine to get off of it. We would look at ideas and philosophies we bought into that are not Yours but Satan's and this world's. I pray, Lord, that You would show us the revolutionary path of truth and the clear contrast that is so often there between the two, and help us to know that You are willing to be the gate and the door in every aspect of our lives if we will let You. Thank You, Father, so much for what You offer. Thank You for letting us be Your sheep. Through Jesus we pray. Amen.
Hey, church. We're so glad you tuned in today. If you need prayer, or if you have questions about what it means to follow Jesus, you can message us on Facebook or visit our contact page on our website, waccconline.org. If you're interested in joining our church family, we have the next steps available for you on our website as well. And remember, we are real people experiencing real grace. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.